July 24th, 2009, it's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
It's episode 75 of the Lullabot Drupal podcast. We get together whenever we feel like it and do a new podcast. I'm Jeff Robbins, and I'm here with the Lullabot team, including
Angie Byrne
and
Jeff Eaton,
as well as
Karen Stevenson,
and also
Eric Gunderson.
Eric Gunderson, not actually part of the Lullabot team, actually part of the Development Seed team, but we've invited Eric on to talk about Open Atrium a little bit and Drupal distributions in general. We're doing today's podcast talking about Drupal distributions, kind of what they are, what they aren't, and how they work, and honestly why there aren't more of them. We thought Eric would be a great person to get on and contribute to that discussion. Thanks for coming, Eric.
Hey, no, it's an exciting topic after the launch.
Yeah. We've been meaning to get you on the podcast for about 8,000 different things over time. I wanted to talk to you guys. You guys kind of ran, well, not kind of, you did run DrupalCon DC and did just an amazing job with that. And I wanted to get you on to sort of do a little aftermath discussion, and I don't know, maybe we can touch on that a little bit here, but yeah, you guys did a great job with that.
Well, thank you.
Well, let's just get started. We'll get to Drupal distributions in a minute. First, some news, Lullabot news and otherwise. We've got workshops coming up in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, in September. We're still working out October. See, like I said, we're working out all of the details right now. We'll have the details up on lullabot.com/training probably by the time this podcast comes out. Yes, workshops, Lullabot workshops in Toronto in October. So go to lullabot.com/training to find out about that. We also will soon, very soon, be announcing, this is sort of a pre-announcement, I guess, announcing our new series of online workshops. We're doing live, they're called about 18,000 different things. I like it when they're called webcasts. That's okay. Sometimes they're called webinars, which I'm not so crazy about. But
I actually am fond of webcastinars.
Webcastinars. Webcastinettes. Maybe.
Yes.
We're calling them online workshops. We're going to get on and stream ourselves over the internet, and we can take questions and do presentations and stuff like that. That also is on the near horizon. Also, lullabot.com/training for that. Oh, goodness. It's been so long since we've done a podcast. We've got new videos out. We've got basic theming and advanced theming at store.lullabot.com, and we've got a brand new Ubercart based store. We were using a service called Shopify before, and they were great. They were super and easy to set up, and I would definitely recommend them, except that they didn't offer quite as many features and customizations as we would like. And so now we've got a new store, and we've got video bundles that we're offering. If you want to buy the CCK and Views videos as a bundle together, you get a discount on them. And same thing for theming. And then there's also an everything bundle where you can buy all of our videos. Store.lullabot.com is that. And it's exciting
it's
for
also
us.
It's also running on Ubercart now, which is exciting news.
Yeah, totally. We are, what's the word, eating our own dog food?
Yeah, for those who don't know, Ubercart is a Drupal-powered e-commerce system.
Yes.
And pretty cool.
Yeah. Yep. What else? Drupal 7 coming towards Code Freeze, Angie, Adrenaline Rising in Angela Byron.
Something like that. Woo! Yeah. So Code Freeze basically is September 1st, and what that means is that all the crazy world domination plans that we have to make Drupal 7 do all these crazy new things, those need to stop, and we need to focus on bug fixing. So, and bug fixing is cool too, but it's not quite as exciting. So if you have a dream for Drupal 7 and you want to try and, you know, power through, or if you want to help on some of the initial, the existing initiatives, like the Drupal 7 UX stuff, there's also a bunch of work going on around, just about everything. Have a look at the list of patches to review and, you know, jump in. We'll try and organize a few more sort of code patch review sprint kind of things in the next couple weeks for those who want to take part. It should be a good time, and then when we get to Paris, we can start rocking on getting it ready for release. So
There's been some interesting and cool new stuff that's gotten in, right? There's like image handling in Drupal 7 now, and
I don't want to spoil it for everybody, but yeah, Nate's working on a bunch of really awesome patches. So there's an image module in Core, which currently does everything that Image Cache used to do, which means you can set up basically thumbnails, and we're using it in Core for user pictures, because user pictures, well, the implementation of those was pretty subpar in Drupal 6 and below. So now in Drupal 7, it uses this set of thumbnails stuff, so you can, you know, make cropped, you know, grayscale, rotated, you know, user pictures or whatever. And you can apply this pattern of images on your whole site. So it basically allows you to eliminate the job of the person who was to, like, open up something in Photoshop and resize it to 300 by 300 for you and then send it back. So sorry, that person, because I know that's a lot of fun. But, you know, maybe you can do something more interesting.
They'll find other things to do, I'm sure. Drink more coffee.
That's an important part of being a designer. It's true. The other part of this is getting file field and image field into Core. So essentially what we'd be doing is replacing the user picture stuff that user module implements with that's kind of this one-off feature that doesn't really make any sense, with an actual image field, like a CCK field, attached to a user. And doing a bunch of work around getting a UI for CCK and Core, just all this kind of stuff. So it's really, really interesting work, and I would love to do a podcast about it and just talk everybody's ear off about all the awesome stuff. But it's winding down, and, you know, the timeline's winding down, which means the efforts are ramping up, and so there's a lot of stuff happening. So if you want to help out with that, just, you know, feel free to jump in and, you know, ping me on IRC, whatever. We're ready to go.
So that, yeah, basically CCK, all of CCK, including fields, at least some fields, are getting into the Drupal core distribution. That's exciting. Karen, have you been involved with that much, Karen?
Well, yes, I worked on the initial getting the fields and core patch going, and we are keeping up the D7 version of CCK for those pieces that are not in core, and so that you can use the D7 version of CCK for whatever missing pieces there are. At this point, the UI is still in contrib, and field group is still in contrib. So there's pieces and parts that are still in contrib, but they may make it into core before freeze, but I'm not sure how much of that's going to happen, but some part of that will make it into core. But whatever's left in contrib will still be available and should be working.
There's been a lot of push around usability, and there's a lot of work that Lisa Reichelt is doing along with Mark Bolton, sponsored by Acquia, for Drupal 7. Has any of that gotten in yet? There was actually some stuff I actually saw that was related to work that you guys were doing, Eric, at Development Seed. I have to mention, so we're using your admin. What are you calling that module? Just
ad- we went right for the namespace, right?
it's
admin.
Yeah, it's drupal.org/project/admin, and it's basically an administration theme and a whole bunch of stuff for Drupal 6. We're using it on our store site, and it's really cool, really, really cool, and implements a lot of the ideas that Mark and Lisa came up with for the Drupal 7 work that they were doing, and a little bit of the buzzer stuff that Lullabot was doing. But now, has that gotten into... There were some patches that were submitted around that for core, and I know that there's like an admin bar in Drupal 7 or...
Right. Yeah. No. Gabor needs a. I mean, Gabor and Angie here need a lot of credit for moving this forward. I mean, Young started moving some patches over. Young Han was the main guy behind the admin project, kind of moving our DS admin. You know, because we all have these special admin modules, right? And then you know the push behind with the community of what Mark and Lisa were doing and Buzzer. It was like, hey, let's actually release this. So I know some parts have moved over to core, but I know Angie knows more about the status of all that.
So the Drupal 7 UX project is around a whole bunch of different reworking of the admin interface. The part that's in Drupal 7 so far is sort of this concept of a header bar, which was basically the least controversial change to make, because most people use like admin menu on their sites or admin module and that kind of stuff. So you've got kind of a basic header bar in there. There's also work going on for a new admin theme that will be enabled by default, as well as this stuff to do administration in overlays, which, you know, being the, you know, resident grumpy, you know, the internet peaked its usefulness in 1993 with Gopher or whatever, you know, like that person. I thought I would hate overlays because basically what happens is you click on a link and black box appears and your little, you know, admin interface appears in this JavaScript swooshy window thing and all that. But actually when I've used it, and the people working on this have their own subversion repository just to make development a little easier at code.google.com/d7ux. And if that's not right, I'll fix the link in the podcast. But basically I've tried it out from there and I actually quite like it because, you know, frequently the way I'm, you know, dealing with the site is I'm reading an article and then I get in mind some admin-y thing I have to do, like, oh, I should really shut off the, you know, submitted by information here or whatever, and you have to completely break your context, go off into the admin panel someplace, do that, and then try and find your way back to where you were, and it's really disorienting and just kind of annoying. And the way that the admin, you know, works when all of these patches get in, hopefully, is when you click on an admin link, it pops up an overlay, but you still see where you were in the background, so you read in that context. And then you kind of do your admin stuff and then say okay, and then it closes and then you're right back to where you were before you started thinking about that weird setting you wanted to tweak somewhere. So there's a lot of energy going around on this. Primarily Gabor is the one sort of driving things. But I'm sure he would love to help. So if this kind of stuff interests you and excites you to work on and you have JavaScript and other front-end skills, you know, search for D7UX in the issue queue, and you'll come up with all sorts of things to work.
and some of that, those historically, some of the user interface stuff has been able to get in after code freeze. Code freeze usually refers to feature stuff, so there may still be some user interface kinds of stuff that will happen on into September and whatnot. So Angie, you mentioned that you'll be working on this in Paris because DrupalCon Paris is happening right around the same time as Code Freeze.
Yep, and actually starts the day of Code Freeze. It goes September 1st through the 5th. Yeah. In lovely Paris, France.
Yeah, we'll be there.
Woo!
Woo! I'll be brushing up on my French and sneaking away to go look at art and culture.
Hey, Drupal community's got lots of art and culture.
Yes, there's, well, there's more, lots of culture in Drupal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Acquia, new money for Acquia. They announced about, what was it, a year and a half ago, something like that, that they had raised $7 million to sort of launch their company. They just announced that they got their Series B funding of $8 million. They now have $15 million, and they're sinking a lot of it into Drupal stuff.
Improvements for core, things that are getting rolled back into the community, like the Apache Solr module, stuff like that. It's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did mention that that this work that Mark and Lisa are doing is primarily funded by Acquia. That's cool. One thing that I did notice about their announcements around the second stuff is it seems like they're putting a little bit less, well, I mean, they're starting to do a lot of other things, which is bringing a little bit less focus to their distribution. So that as we're talking about distributions in this podcast, that's sort of something to note. I mean, it's not that they're moving away from it exactly, but there just seems to be a little bit less of a central focus. When they first came out, it was, you know, they were going to, it seemed like that was the central focus of their business, was they were going to have this distribution and their business would be supporting the distribution. And over the past year, I want to say it was probably 6 months, 8 months ago, something like that, they announced that they would be supporting all of Drupal and not just their distribution, like they had said initially, that they were going to be focused around their distribution. And now they've sort of generalized some and there seems to be less focus.
I think that makes sense to a large extent. I mean, especially because the Acquia distribution, I mean, it's a really nice collection of modules and you get certain things out of the box for free, like, you know, tying in with the Acquia, you know, monitoring network and stuff like that. But at the same time, I think the real strength of distributions for Drupal, at least, lies in pre-building something that accomplishes a particular task or appeals to a particular kind of problem. Like, I need a web app to do X, or I need a site that's going to be doing these five things or whatever. And a more generalized distribution, I think, doesn't necessarily play to the strengths of like building Drupal profiles and distros quite as well, which I think is what Open Atrium is.
Well, that was a wonderful segue. yeah. So, Eric, it was what, about a week ago, something like that? A week and 2 days ago, Development Seed announced that people could start coming and downloading their new Drupal distribution called Open Atrium, which you're going to be much more eloquent about than me, but it's a distribution primarily focused around intranets, or maybe extranets, depending on how you look at it. I don't know. Why don't you give your spiel, Eric?
Yeah, no, I just checked the downloads this morning. We are at over 13,000 downloads. Whoa. On intranet in a box, basically. This all started as a homegrown solution for us to better communicate with our clients. But basically, we needed a way to turn on different spaces for different projects and clients, and then within each space, turn on tools. So it ships with features, about six of them, right out of the box. One's a wiki, one's a blog, one's a case tracker, there's a calendar on there, and then there's also a dashboard, and kind of like a private Twitter, too. And you can enable these features on a group-by-group basis. And what's great, you know, it's using organic groups, so you can control access. So we have our clients, you know, every client has a group, and some other projects have different groups. And depending on what tools you need to address that client, you can just turn them on. What's really cool about it is the fact that you can add other features to it. And you know, using this kind of features paradigm of being able to bundle up configurations, and I should go into that in a little more detail a little later. But the point is, this thing's totally extensible,
And that's great because everybody runs their business differently. Everybody's team runs this differently. Probably in like 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to announce that the World Bank's releasing their intranet on OpenAtrium for their communications team. So you got like 1,000 people geographically dispersed. You can imagine the different needs they have. Well, the features paradigm was able to build to that. So that's where we are right now.
Yes, so you can find it at openatrium.com, and as with all things development seed, the website looks awesome. It's yeah, really, really cool. I mean, it's just great to see Drupal packaged like this. I think so many people are used to seeing Drupal packaged like Drupal.org and kind of the Garland theme and stuff like that, which is not always the best showcase of what Drupal can look like in particular. We always talk about that in our theming workshops and videos and stuff, but it's one thing to talk about it, and it's another thing to actually see it in action. And yeah, it's just really slick distribution, really nice website for the distribution, and yet more just really, really cool work.
No, well, thank you. I mean, this is like the first release, though. Like, we have a lot more to do here.
Oh, okay, so. sure, yeah. So what you're saying is, you know, this is just, we just sort of whipped this off. Yeah, that's really nothing. You haven't seen anything yet. Well,
what we've got to do is we've got to build the community around some of the features and, like, create this space for people that are really excited to work with intranets and community spaces. There's all these Scrum guys now on the GitHub space talking about how to you know, just put in Scrum-based features and whatnot. And we're releasing the skins. It's powered by CSS sprites. And we put all the skins up on GitHub because we're using SVGs for those. So we're just keeping those in Subversion. And then we're able to put them under a BSD license. So we're really hoping that designers can come to this and start further developing out different skins and whatnot. But, you know, right now we're just trying to learn about needs. You know, from a resource perspective, it's been kind of wild launching something like this. We haven't gotten, it's not like there's outside investment moving this forward. So we were like, wait, how can we do this and provide a supportive environment for people coming to a site at the same time, or just not get, you know, like run over by new requests. So we're discovering needs still.
So you're saying you've done all of this without $8 million? My goodness.
Well, you know, we've always kind of had a product-based culture. We're a little weird. I mean, I think a lot of people know that. Like, we're kind of between this, like, international development firm meets, you know, IT partner firm, and in our little own island over here in D.C. So we've been building in D.C. with international development organizations. You got a lot of folks that have geographically dispersed teams. So we've been working on this problem for a while, and that kind of iterative development that is so costly to do right was done on a client by client basis.
Yeah, well, it's very, very cool and very smart of you to continue to put all of the resources into the same bucket. I think a lot of people tend to solve this problem for one client and then go reinvent the wheel again for the next client and on and on. So it's really cool to see this and also to have it out there and that all of us can use it. Really, really cool stuff. Well, let's talk about distributions in general. Obviously, Eric, you guys have a new distribution. We sort of had a little kind of like a brush with distribution kind of a thing. Let's see. So we for our theming videos, we created a theme called 960 robots, 960 robots based on the 960 grid system, which you can find at drupal.org/960, spelled out NINESIXTY robots. Drupal.org/project. Yeah. And that was fine for the basic video that we put out, you know, kind of the basics. But when we started looking at also the advanced theming video, we really wanted people to be able to... I've got this theory. that I say whenever I stand up in front of people and talk about design, particularly in Drupal, the content defines design. It's to some extent an excuse for why there aren't a huge wealth of free themes for Drupal that are generalized, because it's really hard to create generalized design. Once you know what the content is, you can design specifically for that. In talking about our theming videos and creating the theme for our videos, we kind of needed to say what kind of a site we were going to be designing, be theming for. And so as we were putting together these videos, we wanted a way to kind of get this website, that all, you know, a pre-created website full of content out to people who were purchasing and watching the videos. Videos kind of stand on their own, but if you have the code, it would be helpful to be able to kind of, as I say, run your fingers through the code. And so Angie and I got on the phone and started talking about how we could do this, and how it's been done conventionally is to do basically like a database dump, and probably a dump of the files directory as well, or just actually to just sort of bundle up all of the code, the distribution, the actual PHP modules and the file directory and all that kind of stuff, and zip it all up and toss in there a MySQL dump. And send it off, you know, tell people that they can download it. In fact, we did this for Do It With Drupal, the Do It With Drupal conference. We built Basecamp in Drupal. We built a Basecamp clone just for fun to talk about. I still recommend Open Atrium. It uses a lot of the same ideas with organic groups for projects and stuff like that, but it's way cooler than our thing, and honestly, kind of cooler than Basecamp, too. That was how we did the distribution of our Basecamp clone, was just this download. But when we were looking at the this distribution, for lack of a better term, to go along with our videos, we started talking about, well, is there a way to take this SQL dump and just basically make an install profile out of it? Because historically, with Drupal, distributions are just that. They're an install profile. So basically what that means is that when you are installing Drupal, you get a choice. You can either install Drupal the conventional way, or you can use one of these install profiles to activate modules and potentially do a little bit of configuration and stuff like that. But what we were looking at was, is there a way that we could take this database dump and install that during installation, rather than requiring people to have to muck with either PHP MyAdmin or MySQL from the command line, or that kind of stuff. I mean, again, the people who are these videos are aimed at are new to Drupal and are new to theming and are not necessarily as techie as some of the rest of us. And so we created this distribution. We put it out there, and honestly, we got a lot of flack. and it was enlightening for me, because we were really just trying to solve this problem of how do we get this Drupal out there, you know, this Drupal configuration out there to people so that they can just play with it. They can get set up with it. We kind of circumvented some of the Drupal-y ways of doing things. The Drupal way in the install profiles is to do everything through the Drupal APIs and PHP, and it's very laborious and difficult. We did a lot of that work for Buzzer, and it was quite a challenge, and we were honestly kind of delighted with ourselves that we'd put this together. And Angie put an article up on lullabot.com explaining, what was it, like a three-step Drupal distribution or something like that, Angie?
Yeah, it basically it was like, you know, step zero was, you know, make a site worth sharing or whatever. And then, yeah, it's basically, we generalize, not even generalize their profile out, but add a couple of variables so that all people had to do basically was stick a database dump in the profile folder as like dump.sql.gz, or I forget what it was. And then the install profile would just read it in, and that's it. Because, you know, what we were trying to do was speed up the process, because right, it's literally like, well, I'm sure Eric's going to talk all about features and how it eliminates this problem, but without that, you know, making an installation profile the quote-unquote Drupal way is like you grab install profile API, which has wrappers for some things but not others, and you call, if you want to add a block, you call install add block or whatever, and, you know, you call functions for everything, like you have to set variables, variable set, you know, site name is this, and variable set this, and the other thing. The other problem with that is if you hard code some of that stuff, then you can't set it in the installation, and there's just a whole bunch of issues with that. So we were trying to figure out a way to, you know, just get it up there without all that monkeying around, and so yeah, I mean, the point was, like, you install things once, so, you know, get a, you know, a database dump is fine for doing that, so just wrap it up and go. But yeah, people bit our heads off over that. Man, holy cow. And then when I went to OpenWeb Vancouver, I got that in real life from Boris Mann. We were sitting there having a very heated argument about it for like an hour. That was fun. But yeah, they were saying stuff like, you know, this is like a horrible hack, and this is going to bring down the entire distribution. I don't know. It was like one article somehow single-handedly was going to destroy the entire future of distributions. I don't know. But, yeah.
So for a long time, if you go back to past Lullabot podcasts, I've said just distributions, I believe, are the future of Drupal. And I still believe that. However, they're really, really hard to put together. And I think that there are a lot of people like us who, on a regular basis, you know, put together these really cool configurations of Drupal, and would love to just sort of put them out there and share them with the world. But maybe the best practice ways of doing that were really difficult, and so we were just, you know, kind of wanted to push it forward and get this out there. But let's talk about sort of the quote unquote, like, real way that it's supposed to be done and how that's different, because I'm still not sure that I even totally necessarily agree with the right way of doing things. First of all, let's just talk about this idea of an install profile, and what that is, and what are the weaknesses of that system for a distribution. And maybe Eric, you could even weigh in on this. I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I know that you guys have been sort of tackling this problem.
Yeah, right. Installation profiles have been one of the most expectation mismanaging module names out there for a while. And this is actually one of the things I'm most excited about happening in Drupal 7. Adrian's putting a lot of work on it. I think the main title of his ticket on D.O is fix some conceptual problems with install profiles and make them actually usable. Yet we've been talking about these for years. Basically right now, out of the box, you run an install profile and it'll turn on a bunch of modules for you, but then it's like, wait a minute, where are my configurations? And that's obviously what, Jeff, what you and Angie were doing with putting up the dump there. You could immediately get closer to having the blog actually configured with, you know, the other three modules, like image handling and like making sure the CCK fields were all properly configured and whatnot. And those configurations are, you know, for many people, where the open source money is, right? So we get Drupal core, we stick on a bunch of modules, and then we configure them. And that's the, you know, basically the time and materials cost that goes into them. you know, it's pretty hard to capture the actual configurations. And there's been a lot of work over the last 6 months to capture configurations so that when you turn on the blog, it actually looks like a blog. And this has been one of the things that's really hampering the Drupal out-of-the-box experience. But there's some awesome movement forward on this right now. And it's also, until we address this, I mean, Jeff Eaton and Adrian have been talking, exchanging some comments about this also. Like, until we address the actual packaging and making packaging smarter on Drupal, it's really going to be hard to have a smaller and lighter core, and that matters because, you know, back to the design principles, you know, when you're designing something, you're making assumptions about people's content. So how, you know, where is Drupal? Is it over on the framework side? Is it over on the CMS side? And do you benefit from it being in between? You know, I think we are, but yeah. I'll actually, I mean, Angie and Jeff are doing some really, really interesting work here also.
So an install profile is just, well, I guess it can do anything, but primarily, I mean, it doesn't, it's just a single file, that gets triggered once. And this is what I talk about. This is the Russian roulette thing. If you were to have 5 or 6 different installation profiles available for your Drupal distribution, what the end user gets is a description of each, and they can choose one. And if they choose the wrong one, that's it. They don't get to choose again. It's done. The installation has happened. It is over.
Jeff. They can choose again. All they need to do is destroy the site they built and remake a new one.
Right. Well, yeah. They need to go in and truncate the database and all of these sort of techie databasey kinds of things that we really shouldn't expect end users or even site administrators to be able to do.
Well, and not only that, not only are you limited to only making that one choice at the time you install, like if you have a site and you've built a site and now you say, boy, I'd like to add such and such a thing to my site, and there's a really great installation profile that does that, well, you can't do that because you can't add anything with an installation profile to an existing site.
Right. And you can't say, I've got this great site that I've been working on, and oh, there's this cool installation profile. I want to add, you know, Open Atrium functionality to my existing site. You can't download that and just turn it on using the conventional, installation profile system. It's just for installation. And what's more is it doesn't include the modules that are needed or the themes that are needed or whatever things being put in the right place. So really the only way to do it is to package it all up and put it out there, which is why I kind of get into this sort of short out process with the criticisms of our distribution, because and I don't even know if calling it a distribution is the right thing, because I do agree that it's not really using what are the best practices, but it does exactly the same thing. You install it once, and it puts the right things in the right place, and then it's done, and it doesn't matter anymore, and you've got Drupal, and you've got your database, and things are set up. It's not as flexible. It doesn't work under Postgres, or certainly doesn't work under any other database systems. It's just for MySQL.
I think actually the use case that mini distribution or whatever we want to call it was designed for, and what something like, say, Open Atrium was designed for, I think those show really where the strengths and weaknesses of the different approaches are. With something like Open Atrium, you know, you're building things on this features API that the guys from DevSeed have put a lot of work into. So you've got, you know, this plug-and-play quality that, you know, new things can be swapped in and people can turn things on and off. Whereas with the 960 robots, quote, distribution, the goal wasn't so much to build some sort of, you know, framework for blogging. It was, here's a pre-configured site that you need for some task or some workshop or whatever. Run this and you will have that.
I think the idea is that installation profiles are hoping to become a real boy one day. You know, they're hoping that eventually they can do more of these kinds of things. And yeah, when you just bundle it all up as an SQL dump, it doesn't even have any aspirations to be anything more than a marionette or whatever, however that metaphor goes. But yeah.
And the site's nose just keeps getting longer and longer.
It's a Pinocchio reference, everyone. It's a Pinocchio reference. Okay.
And, you know, I would add here that this same problem isn't just with people's individual sites. It's also on the enterprise level where you have to worry about the dev staging and deployment side, too. Mm-hmm. And, like, being able to capture configurations and into code and move those into a subversion or move those in a way where you can pass those over to a new server and just turn them on, that's huge. I mean, how many people out there are listening that have, you know, made adjustments to an image cache preset and then had to go redo all the adjustments on the staging and then go redo all the adjustments on the dev site? Or maybe your site's not so popular and you just get to, you know, say, hey, I'm going offline, and then move the whole thing over. You know what I mean? Like, the like solving this staging development issue is clutch here,
right?
And this is what we're trying to do with features. And like, yeah, go on. Sorry.
I mean, Austin Smith just wrote a really excellent blog post a couple of days ago. I can track down the URL for that and put it in the podcast node. But about moving more and more and more of that configuration into module install files, and, you know, how to capture that stuff in code. And my understanding, and I think this is something that you've touched on a couple of times, is that why the features module and the features API is really sort of at the heart of, you know, this distribution, is that features provides a framework for defining and capturing and making those kinds of, you know, we've moved our configuration into code steps, and making that more official than just having a module with a ginormous install file. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, a good way to think about it is, so you have core, you have these plugin modules, and then features are these like meta modules that basically unite functionality across modules. So features install, like, you do all your configurations and you say, hey, I want to export my blog as a feature. And what it will export, it'll export all the modules that are dependent on this feature. And then it will export the whole configuration for, you know, your views, your CCK, your image cache, and put those all into code. So features, you know, a feature has two parts, the module dependencies and then the configurations, and it just moves it right into code.
So this is the problem, right, is that people don't really want an installation profile. They want something that's much more flexible. They want to be able to have collections of modules and configurations. They want to have features, right? They want to be able to turn on and off part of a distribution, or within their distribution, they want to be able to turn on and off certain features later on. And again, we sort of struggled with this exact same thing with the Buzzer project. And if people aren't familiar with that, as I'm talking about it, buzzr.com. You can find out more information about that. It's a little side project that Lullabot's been working on over some time, and still continues to click along. Basically just started kind of rethinking Drupal from the ground up, and quickly found that this was a problem where, currently, let's say, let's use photo galleries as an example, because, Jeff, you recently put up an article on lullabot.com about creating photo galleries, and there was recently someone created that as a feature for the feature system that Development Seed has put together. So let's say you want to create photo galleries using Jeff Eaton's system. How do you do that, Jeff?
Like, how do you create the photo gallery?
In a nutshell, you have to create.
Okay. The rough recipe that I put together involves taking the views module, the node reference module, the CCK module, the views attach module, another custom module called node reference URL, and then
don't forget image cache.
Oh, yes.
And creating all your image cache sizes.
Of course, image field, file field, and image cache, which, you know.
Well, then you're, of course, assuming that people have CCK and views installed.
But, of course, yeah. I mean, so there's this bundle of, like, close to a dozen modules that you sort of start out with as your, you know, ground zero. And once you've got those in place, you, you know, create two content types, a photo node and a gallery node, and then you use views attach to create, like, a grid view of photos and put that grid of photos onto the gallery node so that there's a node reference that connects photos to galleries. And you have some
very clear instructions numbered out on and as long as you follow these instructions exactly, you can create this. But it's not it's not just a matter of going and clicking a button and saying, I want photo galleries.
Exactly. And that's the other thing too
is if you ever wanted to remove the photo galleries, you have to undo those 1100 steps in reverse order.
If you wanted to say make photo galleries only available inside of a particular organic group.
Right, right. So Eric, how does features come into play here?
Jeff would have made his photo gallery and then exported it as a feature. And it would have said, hey, you need to first go install all these 12 modules and then go into your feature space and click one button, and it will just work.
From an API perspective, and I actually did that. I also did it with an early enough dev version of the features module that it broke when I did that.
Yeah.
But I do see where that's going, and I know some of the bugs that I ran into have also been fixed. It's one of those bleeding edge cool tools. It allows modules that have this exportable stuff where, like, configuration lives. The views module is sort of that, you know, prototypical example of a module that you can do all this clicking around in and then export it as this definition that it can just be passed around and reused. Features module provides, like, hook-in points where any modules that store configuration data can sort of bundle it up and say, here's my config data for that feature that you wanted, go store it or whatever. So that, like, if there's a CCK field or some image cache presets or a link module links that you've, you know, or flag module flags that you've created that go along with things, if they have some basic hooks implemented for the feature module, it can go in and suck out their data, their configuration data, and sort of bundle it together in a single definition. And then in addition, it ties into, I think, the context module, and that's how it's able to do things like, say, this feature should only be enabled in particular organic groups or something like that. Context is another module that your team has worked on, if I remember correctly, that gives Drupal sort of a meta API for asking questions like, am I in an organic group, or am I on a user-related page, or something like that. Is that roughly correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is exactly what allows us to say only show this feature, in this group. And it also allows us to do some pretty amazing things on the theming side.
So Karen Stevenson, as the CCK maintainer, a CCK maintainer, who I assume spends more than your fair share of time in the CCK issue queue, how would this kinds of stuff kind of change your world?
I'm really excited about this. Well, CCK has got exportables, so it kind of plays nicely into this whole idea of having ways to save. That's kind of the key to the whole thing, is that all the components have to have a way that you can capture their essence, their configuration, in a way that you can transfer it around. So we've got that in CCK, and we've got that in Views, and we're missing a few pieces of it. But this is really exciting. I think as a something that we can do. I'm really stoked about this.
And I mean, if this does get traction, like if we're able to move this to a more stable point from the bleeding edge, and a lot of progress has been made in the last 6 weeks, think about what all these different Drupal shops can do. Mm. Like everybody can make these different kind of niche blogs, these niche photo sharing gallery features, and then start being able to share those presets or turn on sites much faster. And you know, and this isn't just a huge deal for small shops quickly having a set of products, but this is also a huge deal for companies like Acquia, right? I mean, think about from a business perspective of how dangerous and expensive it is to say you'll support anything made in Contrablandia. Well, if you can start reducing the amount of baseline modules that you're supporting, and at the same time still meet client end needs with features, this starts looking like a real appealing economic proposition for total cost of ownership of the site.
Mm-hmm. And I think in addition to that, the Drupal community has gone through a really, really big transition since like the Drupal 4.5, 4.6 era. Back in those days, what you're talking about as features were what we called modules.
Right.
The concept of cross dependencies in modules was just bizarre. You know, I think there were like maybe two or three modules that depended on other modules, and they all just depended on image. But the idea that, you know, then modules started becoming, you know, dedicated APIs and started slimming down and doing one thing really well and interacting with each other and, you know, plugging onto other modules, and, you know, you would build these stacks of modules that add onto modules that add onto modules. And suddenly, what a module used to be, this thing that you dropped in and you turned it on, like image module that, you know, had an image node and an image gallery, suddenly it was like, oh, well, you know, we don't do that anymore. But if you download these 15 things, you can configure it into anything you want. And, you know, we lost that sort of drop it in and turn it on quality that was really valuable. But we gained, you know, lots of flexibility. I think in a lot of ways, features are filling that really, really profound need in the community to be able to capture that kind of stuff while still allowing modules to sort of evolve into this role of like the individual little pluggable API bits.
You know what, this really, and I don't remember who it was, it might have been one of you guys that blogged about what we really needed were glue modules to glue all these pieces together.
Yeah, that
sounds like a Jeff Eaton blog, I think. But anyway, but that's kind of, and I have found that that's what I've been doing more and more lately, has been creating glue modules. You know, they are modules that don't really do anything by themselves. They just pull all the pieces together of several other modules and, you know, auto-configure and, you know, get everything all set up. And that's it, because it's so hard to figure out how to do those things.
Let's sort of zoom back out again. So we've been talking about features in particular, but let's sort of zoom back out and kind of look at distributions in general. I mean, so I'm sort of saying like distributions have yet to really kind of get traction in the Drupal community. Do these features start to make distributions like immediately already like deprecated, like you know, are they already obsolete? Like if you have features and now we've got, so Drupal 7, I need to look at this closer, but Drupal 7 has the ability for modules to update like themselves,
There's existing pieces of API that have gone into core that allow module updates to be downloaded from inside of Drupal.
Would that include downloading modules?
Yeah. There's a whole additional set of work that still needs to continue on.
If I just follow this logic out, would that mean that you could basically turn on a feature which would in turn download the modules that it needed, enable those modules? Oh, I can hear the hair on Angie, the back of Angie's neck going up about security problems. Enable those modules, then delete your entire database. Download the modules, enable the modules, and then configure those modules themselves. I mean, so in the past, the distribution was, here's everything you need. But then these little like meta files, these little feature files, could conceivably become like actually a map to how to create this stuff on your site. And you wouldn't necessarily even need a distribution. Am I wrong?
Well, you still want the distribution. You still might want a distribution. I mean, think of it like the features for OpenAtrium is kind of like adding the chocolate to the peanut butter here. I mean, like the installation profile like gets you all set up. But you know, from a long term perspective here, being able to then add additional functionality, yeah, that's exactly what you're talking about. And like being able to see when a feature is updated, wouldn't that be cool for a subscription service? Like if Lullaby ran like a music store had you know, several music store like features, then all these different rock artists out there could subscribe to your features, and as you update them, they could be like, oh look, you know, this feature is out of date, let me update, and click and it will download, right? And then you just have to go into your files directory and put that in. Now I know some stuff's happening, there are conversations around a plugin manager and avoiding that interaction with your file director, and I know there's a lot of research going on right now into assessing what's the most secure way to do this and vetting that along with what WordPress is doing and whatnot, just to further make it easier. And we need to all keep working to make things easier at the same time of balancing security.
Yeah. So I guess that maybe the distribution we can think of as a way of sort of launching us out of the gate and getting us to the right place very quickly. So Drupal is very generalized. Maybe Drupal is too generalized. And so when you can start to narrow it down to saying this is a distribution for intranets, if you have clients or, you know, people that you want to coordinate in groups or projects, however you want to look at it, and you want to do that, get OpenAtrium, it will get you there. It's got a nice theme that's based on the type of content that you're going to have. It looks freaking beautiful, and you'll get there like this afternoon. You'll have it working. And so there's really power in that. And then, I mean, there could be distributions for everything. Again, for Do It With Drupal, we do these, fantasy sites, and we built Flickr in Drupal. So, you know, a photo sharing, community-based photo sharing website in Drupal. We make actual clones of the sites for shock value,
I could totally use features for my pet microblogging service, icanhas.com.
Exactly. Yeah. But like to create, yeah, like you said, Drupal distribution for photographers, Drupal distribution for musicians and bands, Drupal distribution for maybe more group based kinds of things. Calendaring and organizing event management kinds of stuff. I mean, this is all the kind of stuff which people talk about Drupal can do, but
you also have to use it for 2 years before you can make it do that.
Well, yeah, and I mean, we sell a lot of videos and books and stuff like that trying to help people to get there, but wouldn't it be nice to just be able to get there quicker for people that didn't want to get all into the nitty-gritty of that?
Here's just a question, though. If we're, you know, the process of features is great because it's going to, you know, turn what was an hour-long exercise in checking a bunch of checkboxes into 1 second. But one of the things that you gather over the course of checking a bunch of checkboxes, you start to learn how these underlying tools in Drupal work, like how CCK works, how views can be customized, how to, you know, you could use that knowledge in another area of your site. And we're abstracting that way, that knowledge. Do you have concerns over what that's going to do to the learning curve? Like, are we just deferring the Drupal learning curve and you're still going to get smacked in the face with the views interface and have to, you know, deal with understanding that if you want to change the title of your photo gallery? Or do you feel like, you know, features are going to be are features going in the direction of providing their own configuration interface? You never touch views, or like how, just could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. To still do awesome ninja stuff, you're gonna have to know how the modules work, sure. But to still like you're saying, just going in and making some adjustments to your feature configuration, you're gonna have to go into those other module spaces. So, you know, it could be dangerous where you make it very easy to turn on a bunch of features, and then you quickly walk into places where, you know, the room's not so clean yet. There's still a lot of UI stuff to do, or you know, they're very powerful rooms, and it requires getting a DVD from you guys to figure out how to configure it.
Oh, horror!
Looking at features from our perspective right now, it really helps developers out. I mean, it's transformed the way we build sites just by being able to handle the staging development space. And I think, you know, it's got a good couple months ahead of it here as we start looking at other people starting to build features around, you know, in our case, Open Atrium. Like, I'm very curious to see what the problems start happening here. And also, like, how do you start sharing these features? Like, I would love to hear, like, and also, like we just talked about distributions. Like, what should be on Drupal.org? Like, should it have several flavors? Like, what does that mean for the community? Is there going to be, like, a Drupal press kind of little wing that helps garden, you know, that download? And then, like, what does that mean from an infrastructure perspective on D.O. too? And right. Then, like, how do you share these features? Should they be up as modules?
Right. Are we sort of in this very idealistic way, essentially talking about forks of Drupal and forking Drupal and kind of starting to fork efforts and kind of confusing things, maybe.
Well, I mean, since you said the F word, I think features actually helps prevent forking projects, because it allows us to focus community energy on very baseline functionality, like some of these core APIs, and allows, you know, the real custom stuff to happen in a space where there's going to be very differing perspectives on things, and where you know, certain assumptions just can't work.
And I think there's another sort of potential conflict down the road in just that different people, different development shops have different methodology, different best practices. For a while there was the whole image module versus image field module concept. You know, should an image be a part of a node, or should an image be the node? Other sort of philosophical things like that have come up over time. I know there was a little bit of stuff early on with spaces and context stuff with, you know, you guys were sort of developing one way of doing things and other people were developing another way of sort of solving the same problem. And they were both sort of had their merits, you know, it's sort of the VHS beta argument, or maybe what are we saying now? HD DVD versus Blu-ray, you know.
HD DVD is dead.
Well, yeah, but for a while there, you want to just sort of sit back and, like, let's see what happens, you know. I don't know. There are different ways of doing a lot of the same things, and certainly when we do our videos, we just kind of need to pick one way and say, you know, this is a functioning way of doing this. We think that it's efficient, but there are probably other ways of doing this. As features come out, there could conceivably be conflicting features that have different philosophies on doing the same kinds of things. But probably just in the same way as there are modules. And then, I don't know, we'll need to get feature review websites and as the same.
I, I hope there are many conflicting features, because I think features express preferences. I mean, as some of you might know, like I see a world where different shops and different organizations can set up their own like little feature servers and say, hey, this is how I like to configure these modules. And you have these modules living over on Drupal.org and being assessed through the security team and getting all the values of like this just huge, awesome community. But the configurations can all be, you know, competing in their own little spaces and being adjusted, and people can subscribe to all these different shops, different features. So I can get a feature feed from, you know, maybe Lullabot, a feature feed from maybe Acquia, a feature feed from, you know, like Phase 2 or something.
Yeah. So, okay, I'm just going to, just a generalized question. I'm curious to hear from each of you. What do you feel like is the realistic future of Drupal distributions? Like success, failure, lots, few? Are we actually going to see this happening over the next couple years, or will it sort of fizzle? I don't know.
I can start with that. I would say that if all of the crazy stuff that Adrian has in his head makes it its way to reality for Drupal 7 in terms of installation profiles.
You're speaking of Adrian Rousseau.
I'm sorry, it's Adrian Rousseau, Development Seed.
Yeah.
Who the first of his said crazy ideas has landed, which is profiles have .info files now, which just like modules and just like themes, and what that means, it sounds like a really simple thing. It's like, oh yeah, sure, that makes it really easy to declare dependencies and all this, but so it sounds like a really basic thing, but what it does is it changes the paradigm, because now Drupal distributions could be distributed from Drupal.org, because, you know, in the past, all the metadata about a profile was encoded in PHP, and we do not want Drupal.org's infrastructure parsing PHP code looking for useful things to, you know, it's just like not a good idea. So when we have .info files, now what Drupal.org, the Drupal.org packaging system could do realistically now is look through those .info files, find the list of modules, and when you click the download link on a profile, automatically bundle all those together and give you one tarball with everything. Because right now the process for getting a Drupal distribution from Drupal.org to your computer is like, download the distribution, open up the .profile file, read the list of modules, and go download them all yourself, and it just is a little bit crazy like that. Or if all this plugin manager stuff gets into core, then the process might even have to go to Drupal.org at all. You might be able to manage this all from your own Drupal installation and browse the list of, you know, available profiles and stuff like that. So I would say that we have the potential to really let this take off, and really have specialized Drupal distributions for just about everything. Right now, there's only really a few Drupal distributions that have gotten any sort of merit. I know Drupal Ed, I haven't heard about it in a while, but Drupal Ed was attempting to be a distribution for like a learning management system.
Yep. We had Bill Fitzgerald from, yep, Funny Monkey on the podcast talking about that. And that, if at least at one point, that was just this method. They'd zipped up all the files and there was a MySQL dump, and, mm-hmm, and that was the distribution. Sorry, I cut you off. Go.
That's okay. Yeah, no, that was. So there's that. There's Open Atrium. There's one by Phase 2 called Open Publish, I want to say, which is all this news, crazy, you know, RDF, RSS, crazy Open Calais stuff, all sort of put together as a publishing system. You know, so there are Drupal distributions out there, but the process of finding them and getting them is really, really bad right now. So, you know, there's that, and that's all sort of the way it is. So we have the potential to move in that direction. I do share a lot of, or maybe not share, but I have a lot of concerns about the long-term implications of the community, with things like this. And this sort of plays into, there's, Twitter the other day, there was a kerfuffle about, you know, Acquia's design site and all this other stuff. And, you know, and Eric talks about, oh, wouldn't it be so great if all the Drupal shops had their own feature servers and, you know, had this is how we do things, and this is how we do things, and we can all share it. And it's like, yeah, but something that hurts is currently the Drupal distribution, or the Drupal community, is very, very, very centralized. Everything happens on Drupal.org. The, you know, module development happens on Drupal.org. Theme development happens on Drupal.org. The issue queues where everybody discusses improvements and bugs and features and all this kind of stuff, that all happens on Drupal.org. What the consequence of that is, And Dries has said that he's pretty convinced that, that having all this stuff centralized was one of the reasons that Drupal developed the kind of community around developers that it did, is because everybody was playing in the same sandbox, and it was really easy to stumble across some really cool thing someone else was doing and be like, wow, I want to help with that, and sort of jump in with both feet and, you know, throw in some patches in there or write some documentation or whatever. As we move, you know, away from that, we start breaking off chunks of the community. You know, the advantage is that you can start to build, like, you know, Eric was saying, he's got Scrum experts in his GitHub repository issue queue over somewhere else that's not Drupal.org talking about adding features to enable Scrum. But nobody in the Drupal community knows that. They'll know it now because they're here on the podcast, but, you know, and it's possible that those Scrum masters could have a lot of really excellent feedback and, you know, patches to contribute and all this other stuff to existing modules on Drupal.org, but in reality, they're never going to get there. They're going to be part of this sort of sub-community around Open Atrium, and, you know, we start sub-communities for designers, we start sub-communities for this, that, and the other thing, and what happens is Drupal.org slowly starts to consolidate as a resource only for Drupal site builders and developers who are hardcore into it. And it starts to really lose the diversity that it currently has because we're all sort of forced to play in the same sandbox and get along. So, you know, I just have some...
I have so many possible counterpoints. So one is that, yeah, but by trying to serve everyone, does Drupal.org sort of serve no one person very well? I mean, I would argue right now that it's very oriented towards techie type people. I do agree. I mean, I think it's good to have one place that is sort of the central place for everyone. So we don't end up with, microbiologists who, are, you know, using Drupal on a daily basis and building entire systems with Drupal, but never, ever, you know, have any interaction with Drupal.org and have no, you know, many of them don't even know that Drupal.org exists. You know, it doesn't really help. It sort of inherently starts to fork things off, just sort of logically would start to fork things off as they might find, oh, Drupal doesn't do this thing that we need to do. And I don't understand those people over at Drupal.org. You know, they feel like it's them rather than us. Mm-hmm. Another concept that I've talked about in the past, you know, and then say, oh, well, we're just going to take this Drupal and start to do our stuff with it. So that could certainly be a problem. Another point I have is if we have, as we just did, made an analogy between an article that Jeff Eaton wrote on lullabot.com describing how to create this feature, for lack of a better word, create this functionality for a gallery site, and he put it up on lullabot.com because that's a great place to put this kind of a description, you know, and then Eric says, you know, well, this could also be a feature. Why not have that feature live somewhere else and in a place that it can be a little more showcased? If that's really how we're doing things now with the sort of Drupal Planet ecosystem of interrelated developer websites that are out there, that for people that don't know about it, you can go to drupal.org/planet, and it's the sort of listing of people who do a lot of Drupal work. They're usually their blogs, or like lullabot.com, it's sort of our top level website. Where we and they are talking about Drupal, it all gets aggregated onto Drupal.org there. But that sort of has become another place that Drupal people, will watch to sort of keep track of what's going on. Why couldn't features sort of evolve in the same way as the Drupal blogging ecosystem has?
They could. The thing that concerns me, though, is that, and I didn't mean to take like 40 minutes of that. Well, everybody go around the table. But the thing that concerns me is the decentralization of development resources and the decentralization of the brain space around problem solving in Drupal. Right now, every single problem that's ever been solved in all of Drupal and all modules and all themes is encapsulated in the issue queue. you can go in any line of code in all of Drupal, click on CVS Annotate, find out not only the commit message that led to that change, but the entire back discussion that led to that change. And you can click on the names of any of those people and see what other discussions they've been a part of, and kind of gauge from that, are these people, you know, are they trustworthy? Do they generally know what they're talking about? You know, do they help others more than they try and help themselves? Which is really important when doing things like evaluating Drupal shops when you're trying to hire somebody. And there's just all of this benefit that you gain from having this type of stuff there. If we had had distributions back in Drupal 3, would we have gotten a taxonomy system in core, or would that have been part of the Drupal for libraries distribution? Do you know what I mean? So it's like there's a lot of benefits that the Drupal community has gotten by having everybody in the same pool. And writing about Drupal, you could make the argument that, you know, a lot of what's in the planet could be in the handbook and that kind of stuff. And I think that that's a valid argument, but there's a lot of stuff on the planet that has no place in the documentation either. It's just press releases or it's announcements of Drupal events, and it's just kind of a general way to keep a pulse, you know, on what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer. I just have a lot of concerns. A lot of this comes too from, you know, a lot of what I do in my, you know, off time, quote unquote, is I really am passionate about getting more women involved in open source, because there aren't nearly enough women, and, you know, and I want to change that, because open source is awesome and women are awesome, and there you go. But it's, you know, there's a lot of pull in certain communities to sort of segment the women off into their own area, and, you know, creating a safe space for them so that they're shielded from this big bad other community where everybody hangs out. And I think that kind of thinking is really dangerous, because the way to make a community more diverse and more accepting to all minority groups, including women or including scrum masters or including whoever, is to get more of those kind of people in there doing cool stuff, because then others will kind of see someone they can identify with and say, "Ooh, this is the community I want to be part of." And if we start pulling away that diversity into these sort of focused pools that are off-site, I think that it's going to hurt the long-term sort of, you know, growth of Drupal as a whole. Maybe not like a year from now, but maybe 5 years from now, you know, when we have all these sort of sub-communities that are established around, you know, existing specialties and stuff like that. So, you know, it's just stuff that's on my mind as like a person who spends more time in the Drupal community than just about anybody else. So, yeah. You know.
I think that to some extent, I mean, that kind of, I don't necessarily like to think of it as splitting, but I think specialization and forming subgroups and offshoots, I think that's to some extent inevitable as a community grows larger, just because, you know, a particular kind of model for people interacting and collaborating can't scale infinitely, and ultimately you have to start finding these pockets where specialization can occur. I think the key, and this is a really big one, is making sure that as those little pockets appear and as those groups split off and start working on, you know, dedicated things that they want to focus on, that there's still a good solid mechanism for interaction, collaboration, and cross-communication between those groups to occur. It's, you know, splitting off isn't bad as long as, you know, you remain in contact with the mothership and aren't just sort of off there, you know, off doing your Lone Ranger thing.
Yeah, I agree. It's great that we have this problem. I mean, this is not a problem that a small community has. I mean, you know, it's the kind of things that you find as a community starts getting large enough to sort of support these special interest groups. It's a difficult thing because again, it goes back to this question: is Drupal too generalized? And to that end, can distributions help to focus it in certain cases? I mean, if we start looking at Drupal not as maybe not even as the end product so much as the middleware, the, you know, APIs, as a framework.
That's kind of what I was going to say is, you know, I think one of the really good directions that we're going in is the idea that what belongs in core is the API, and then, you know, other things can use the API. We're, a lot of things that are coming along are, you know, get a good API in core and then use it in various ways in all different places. Like, I was thinking about, like, Angie's example about taxonomy and would it only be in the librarians group. Well, if as long as people keep thinking in kind of in global terms, which is not what is my specific use case and let me build a little very specific thing that that does my specific use case, but kind of what's the big global thing that I need, which is a system of managing taxonomies, that goes back into core. We put, you know, as it is now, and then we have a specialized way of using it, maybe in the librarians group, and everybody else has their own special way of using it. So as long as we're all hooked back into the mothership, which is really the key, as long as we're all hooked back into the mothership and thinking in global terms, that's always been a strength of Drupal, is its hookability, right? That it's, there's lots of ways you can hook into it and do lots of cool things. And as long as we maintain that, we can do lots of cool things in lots of different places.
So to some extent, the argument behind that is that if Drupal core, Drupal that you download from Drupal.org and you don't install any extra modules, if it has a set of things that it does on its own, you know, that are too specific, people might confuse that with what Drupal can do. And so that's sort of the argument behind, some part of the argument behind what is this sort of new movement of smaller Drupal core. Maybe it's not even that new.
Well, and maybe where we're really going is everything's a distribution in a sense. That there's a core distribution that has the core API with some something or other, you know, some basic blog stuff or whatever goes into that. Right. And then we've got other distributions that, you know, cut across things in various other ways.
Eric?
Exactly.
Eric, you have thoughts about that?
Yeah, you know, I do. I kind of like the little small core movement. And, you know, as Jeff Eaton mentioned, and everybody else is thinking, yeah, it's a no-starter unless we get the packaging right. And what Karen's talking about is something that I see really, really possible if we keep working hard to get the infrastructure in line to do a lot of packaging. You know, more in regards to the mothership. I mean, I think the incentives to stay connected to the mothership are going, you know, Drupal.org here are going to remain so strong moving forward that I'm not worried about things splitting up. I think there's going to be a need for infrastructure to make this work. Maybe if that's a list of certain feature servers. Right now, there's a list of localization servers, but we're having problems getting stuff upstream, right? What happens when you have, you know, two localization servers that have some things from both languages? You know what I mean? There are some hard problems to figure out here. But in short, I see decentralization as actually kind of a net that goes out and grabs people and actually funnels in good ideas and brings more goodness back to D.O. I mean, at least that's how it is on our projects. Like we're, it's not like we're working on D.O. every day like Angie is, but we're working on client projects every day and then start bringing back better things to our modules on Drupal.org, bring back the lessons learned. And I see if we get the infrastructure right, Drupal is going to continue to be the catalyst that actually fuels these other spaces.
That's a really interesting idea, that funnel. I mean, going back to that sort of microbiology example where you've got these microbiologists kind of working on their site, and maybe rather than forking, they do come back to Drupal.org with these ideas and say, hey, we've found that Drupal needs to do this, and we have our own taxonomy system, and the Drupal core taxonomy doesn't understand that, so let's, you know, and we get these new people who may know a whole lot about microbiology but don't necessarily like to hack at PHP the same way that a lot of the people on Drupal.org do. Cool. Well, let's try and sort of wind this thing down. Anyone have any sort of summarizing thoughts about all of this?
Holy crap, Open Atrium.
It's very cool. It's very
holy
cool.
crap, code freeze.
Yeah. Yeah.
My August is going to be awesome.
Angie is hating it and loving it all at the same time.
Oh, no, I totally love it. It's awesome. Like, it reminds my first code freeze was 4.7. That was a fun one. So it just reminds me of, like, you know, that there's this big, huge rush that happens about maybe 2 to 3 weeks before Code Freeze Zero, when just sort of panics at the same time and is like, ah, this has got to go in right now, and things like that. So I'm looking forward to not sleeping for pretty much the entire month of August. But it's fantastic, and I think Drupal 7 is going to be, it's definitely going to be the best release of Drupal yet. I think it's going to just blow everybody's socks off, you know, the amount of stuff that the amount of no-brainer stupid stuff we've managed to fix, the amount of new interesting features there are for both developers and end users, and just sort of the sort of paradigm shifts that it's introducing around fields and around potentially install profiles to really, you know, drive the Drupal community to its next level or whatever. So yeah, right on.
Cool. Well, usually at the end of the podcast, we like to do a little pick of the week, and I'm just going to go with Open Atrium. Seems like a no-brainer here. Again, openatrium.com, openatrium.com. Really cool. And again, a really interesting example of what a Drupal distribution can be, and I really hope that people listening to this podcast and people not listening to this podcast will start to think about what can be done with Drupal distributions and what can happen in Drupal core to sort of better support this kind of stuff in the future. So really great work, Eric, and your team. Please pass along word that we think you're great.
Well, thank you guys. We're having a lot of fun over there, over here, and just getting to work with everybody over there with your team and just the Drupal in general. I mean, this is we're standing on a lot of other people's work, and that's why I'm so confident that distributions are really going to pick up steam in the next year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we'll see everybody in Paris. It's the first week of September. I do believe that tickets are still available. It keeps coming close to selling out, and then they like get more space or something like that. So I believe that tickets are still available. And Paris, woo! We'll see y'all there. And we're trying to pick up the pace, do more podcasts more frequently as we can. But it's summer and we're all hot and tired. And and Angie's got Code Freeze coming. Well, we all have Code Freeze coming up, but I'm able to look away, whereas Angie is not. So, wah, wah. Cool. Well, thanks everybody for coming on the podcast, and Eric Gunderson from Development Seed, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Adios.